The Recap Show is an inside look for fans into the world of global soccer, women's sports, and all things gal culture.
From the inside perspective of two World Cup champions and Olympians.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Tailgate.
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 It's time for the tailgate.
Toss me a cold one. Nothing better than a 7 a.m. beer and an unbrushed mouth.
Your official weekend destination for all things football.
You are looking live.
The granddaddy
of them all.
NCAA.
Travis Hunter circles around down the sideline. There he goes. The most dynamic player in college football. Touchdown, Colorado.
The NFL.
Williams, pressure coming. He felt it. Looked, saw it. Evaded it. Still on the move. Looking around. Williams is going to take off for the end zone.
It's its own playground.
And now, it's time to kick off the tailgate with your host, Paul Pabst.
You ready, champ?
I'm ready for this my whole life.
On Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score and live on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to the tailgate 670 The Score. I am Paul Pabst, your master of ceremonies to talk football, college, and pro every Saturday morning here on The Score. Morale took a big hit last weekend. The Bears season is over, but we are here for you in every way possible. Football never ends on this show. A lot coming up today on The Score. We have a recap of the Bears versus the Rams, of course, the Bears season overall. And in 20 minutes from now, we will be joined by Chicago Bears tight end Durham Smythe. Good player, a lot of fun. He will help us recap the Bears season, his time with Caleb Williams, and recap the Rams game and what went right, what went wrong, and what's next for this franchise. Also today on the show, we'll get you ready for the AFC and NFC title games. Sunday, Patriots versus Broncos. I think the New England's given 4.5. Rams versus Seahawks. Seahawks giving 2.5. That's your Sunday. It's 3 degrees, maybe under still. Get inside, watch some football, make some chili, and get ready. But in about 5 minutes from now, we'll be joined by former New England Patriots, 3-time Super Bowl champion defensive back Devin McCourty. He's an analyst for NBC's Football Night in America. He was at Soldier Field last Sunday night on the sidelines for Bears-Rams. He'll give you his thoughts on how that game ended, how it could have gone differently, and the future of the Bears. All that is coming up. Let's get to it. Let's get to the vibe, because the feel right now in Chicago, if you're a Bears fan, to me, it goes in stages. The loss to the Rams, you know, anger, disappointment, maybe in the reverse order. But for me right now, it's like the end of the roller coaster ride. Did I think the Bears could win the Super Bowl? Honestly, if you asked me a month ago, I'd have said, I can't see it. It's hard to picture. But you're in the mix. You're in the playoffs. You're hosting playoff games. The ride this season of the 2025 Bears was so great. The comebacks, the takeaways, the scene at Soldier Field, the cheese grater guy. This season needs a documentary. And most seasons that don't end up in a Super Bowl don't get documentaries. And to use the word disappointing for this season is just the wrong word. Can you say that the ending of the Rams game was disappointing? Yes, because you could picture yourself advancing on, facing the Seahawks. And I know the Seahawks are great, but you're in the game. That would be the wrong word here. Like, if you're a Bills fan, this season was disappointing. An Eagles fan, disappointing. But not the Bears. If you're a supporter of the Bears, I think you think maybe unfulfilled. But man, that was one of those losses where after that game was over, you pause for a second, you start playing things back in your head. The Caleb throw, the DJ Moore, and the field goals that were tried to be touchdowns and fourth downs. You start replaying that game in your head. But then you move on, I think maybe Monday or Tuesday, and I listen to The Score daily. It almost felt like step-by-step, like grief, or what you want to call it as a sports fan, because it goes from anger, disappointment, regret of certain plays in the game. And then you start thinking about the future of the Chicago Bears, and your mood just suddenly gets a lot better, a lot faster. Because I don't have to say this too many times, but the Bears' future is not set, but it's beautiful. And compared to a lot of teams, especially in the NFC North, so if I were giving a name to this team, maybe ahead of schedule, this Bears team, if you said in August was going to be against the Rams in the NFC title or NFC playoff game to get to the NFC title game, I don't know if you would have bought that back in August. So I do want to talk a little bit about the game. And 3 or 4 minutes from now, Devin McCourty of NBC Sports will join us. 15 minutes from now, Durham Smythe will join us. But let's go back to Bears-Rams. The anticipation, the weather, Jim Cornelison doing the anthem. My God, I'm so glad that got put on national TV. In the first half, you know, passing on field goals, it didn't bother me too much in the moment because I saw what Ben Johnson, or I believe what Ben Johnson was trying to do was, I think we're going to need sevens, not threes, because the Rams offense is going to score. But what happened was the defense of the Bears overachieved a bit with the Rams. They slowed down Puka. They put pressure on Stafford. In the second half, the Bears offense couldn't get a lot of points, almost no points. The fourth quarter, you get the first and goal at the 6-yard line, and it felt like a win was at hand, or at least you're going to get it to overtime. They don't punch it in. The defense holds, gets the ball back, and then you set up the 4th and 4, the pass from Caleb to Kmet. People have been riffing on this play for days, and I'm probably going to be the last person to riff on it. But when I watched that play, I mean, that play felt like it took an hour. He starts rolling one way and then another, and then he starts just going backwards, Caleb Williams. And you start going, no, no, no. And how many times this season have you done that? And it becomes a yes. He throws the ball up to Kmet, and I see Kmet there, and he does the light push-off, smart move by him, and he catches it. I was so shocked by that play, or maybe not shocked that Caleb made it, but shocked that it happened. I'm like, where's the flag? Is there a flag? There's got to be a flag. Then you get to overtime, big stop, get the ball back. And when you're watching that game, it felt like it was 2nd and 8, just chipped down the field, 2 or 3 more first downs. You kick it, you go home, you go on to move into playoffs. 2nd and 8, it didn't feel like you needed any urgency. DJ Moore was a little banged up a few minutes earlier. He runs a little soft route, solid throw. I think the decision of the throw was a mistake. You didn't need it. You needed 5 yards and 5 yards and first down and first down. Cairo Santos and the weather has been really good this year. So a few things went wrong. We're going to talk a little bit more about it later. The decision, the route, it's hard to accept after that game. Stafford gets the ball back, makes a great play to Davante Adams, then to Puka, field goal, ball game, gut punch. And it's one of those games that will stay with you. You'll play it back in your head and say, that could have been a win. An overtime with the ball, with lots of time to go, it could have been a win. This is Paul. I'm Paul Papp, 670 The Score. We have you set for Championship Sunday on doubleheader on The Score, starting with Patriots at Broncos in the AFC Championship game, followed by Rams Seahawks in the NFC. Tomorrow's doubleheader. Coverage begins at 1, continues throughout the day right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. Joining us now on the tailgate, 3-time Super Bowl champion, defensive back from the Patriots. He's also on NBC's Football Night in America. Devin McCourty is our guest on the tailgate. Devin, before we get to this weekend's games, you were at Soldier Field last Sunday night on the field. When the game went to overtime, what did you think was going to happen?
Honestly, I didn't think it was going to go to overtime. I thought when Caleb throws, incredible throw. I thought they were going to go for 2. I thought they were going to say, we're not going to overtime. We tied the game up. I thought they would go for 2 points and just end the game right there because Ben Johnson had been so aggressive both playoff games so far.
Yeah, I was looking at that play, and sometimes I wish you could freeze the TV and freeze the game, and we could all make our decision, go for 2 or not. I was against going for 2. Again, I didn't play ball, but I was like, the defense is doing a pretty good job on the Rams. Stay with it, but then you're thinking more, don't give the ball back to Matt Stafford.
And for me, like, you tie it up at 17. So, like, my initial thing was, man, like, let's kick some damn field goals today.
Right.
We bypass opportunities to kick field goals because we say we were an aggressive team. We're going to be aggressive. So now I look and I say, all right, you want to be aggressive and talk about going to win a game? That's the time to be aggressive. We're lining up. We get to do a 2-point play for our season, for the game. Let's go do it. Now we know the ending. We get it. We win. If we don't, we lose rather than first drive of the game, we can go get points and play from ahead. We go for it. We don't get it. That, to me, is more of like, are we being aggressive or are we just saying this is who we say we are, so now we have to go? I don't know if that's smart. I'd rather wrap my mind around we're going for the win in this moment. I would be able to live with that more as a player.
Yeah, so we're going like reverse order here. If you go back to the start of the game, do you think Ben Johnson thought to himself by passing on 3 for hopefully 7, we have to go shoot out with the Rams offense and 3 won't get it done?
I do. I think he thought that. But then I'm like, are we not going to learn from the week before? Like, you play Green Bay and yes, you give up with 1 drive for a touchdown, but the other drives were on short fields after missed opportunities going for a 4th down. So it looks like, man, this defense is so bad, but it was 21-3. And you kind of spotted them 14 points by putting your defense in a bad situation. And then I look up in that game and I'm like, man, the defense played awesome in the second half. Like, they really were a big part of why you got stops. And I just think you got to let the game play out. Playing for Coach Belichick, his main thing preaching us was, we want to play from ahead. You can't play from ahead if you turn down opportunities to get points. So whether it's 3 points, 7 points, we all want seven. But I hate when I see teams turn down field goals. And I know other former players have different outlooks on that. I just think it helps the momentum and morale of your team when you can at least walk away with points.
Yeah, and that may be one of those things where a second year, a third year head coach would know that, or maybe think to go with that, be maybe a little less aggressive. Devin McCourty, Football Night in America, three-time Super Bowl champ with the Patriots, joining us. You are on the sidelines with your Football Night in America crew. Where are you standing on the 4th and 4 when Caleb drops back and throws it? And what did you see?
You know, what's so funny is a year ago, we're in Philadelphia. Rams have the drive to try to go win, and they're driving down to us. That's where our setup was.
Right.
So I have video of the last throw to Puka, and it was awesome. So now we walk on the field to get ready for post game, and I say to our guys, Rosie and JK, I'm like, man, they're going the other way. We're going to miss, or we're not going to miss it, but we're not going to get a great look at the final play. And it just so happens it's going down there, and we see Caleb, and he's running backwards, and he throws the ball, and I'm like, man, that's exactly what we wanted, but we were on the opposite end on the Bears sideline for that play, which would have been incredible if it was coming towards us.
But as a defensive back, we look at that and go, that's freaky. How freaky is that for a defensive back to see a quarterback do?
Oh, I mean, for one, you're in coverage and you're looking, and once the quarterback runs out of the pocket, you can't grab, but you're allowed to push. There's no pass interference until the ball's in the air. So I'm sure they're like, okay, I'm trying to push my guy out of bounds. Okay, I'm not going to be able to push Cole Kmet all the way out of bounds over here. I just got to stay on him. But at least I can stay on him moving and using my hands.
Right.
And then you're like, okay, you look down and it's your fake watch. How long are we supposed to do this? And then I can't imagine when you look back, that ball must feel like it's in the air forever. And you look like you judge it the right way. And Kmet actually does a better job of judging it. It's 4 yards deeper. That's just such a tough play. And that's what's so special about Caleb Williams. The fact that he hasn't made just one of those. He's done that multiple times this year where he makes a throw on a play where we're like, how is that possible? So sky's the limit, I think, for him going forward.
Yeah, I think all Bears fans really believe that they have their quarterback for the next decade. But there are always improvements to be made. And guys like Tom Brady or Peyton Manning will take 5 yards on 2nd and 10 and be happy with that. How do you tell a young guy to accept less oftentimes and during a drive?
I think it all starts to click for you at some point. And I think for me, what I loved about Caleb this year was you saw a maturation in his game. Like, you saw how he was last year. Still some great plays, but it was so up and down. He was inaccurate. His completion percentage seemed good, but it wasn't. And this year, it was like, man, his completion percentage still isn't great, but it was like, oh, but he's throwing some balls away. He's actually making some decisions that are better for the team. And I think next year, we're going to see him make more on-schedule throws. We're going to see him more time say, you know what? I'm playing with Swift and Manungai. As good as I am with the ball in my hands, they're maybe just a little bit better. I'll check it down instead of holding it and guessing and waiting to see what happens. I think he'll start to see, because one of the best things that happens in the offseason, you get to go back and watch yourself play football without worrying about the defense I'm preparing for next week. This is just straight self-scout breakdown. How do I get better? And I think the great quarterbacks really get with coaches or quarterback coaches, and they go through that, and then they work on those things. They go out, and while they're throwing, they're looking, and it is throwing to check down because their coach is going to be yelling, hey, cover two, or they're in this coverage. And now how fast can you say, boom, boom, pat the ball, it's not there, check down. So I do think he wants to get better, and I think he now has the guy in his ear telling him how to get better. And I think he's going to buy in and listen to that, and I would expect to see him take another jump in year three.
Devin McCourty, NBC's Football Night in America, joining us. Three-time Super Bowl champ. Really nice flex with your backdrop there with three Super Bowl trophies. We're going to get to that in a minute. You know, the Rams didn't have their best outing offensively or defensively. As we get to the NFC and AFC title games with you, do you think some people will think that the Rams are a little less threatening than maybe a month ago because of the outing they had last week?
Yeah, I do. I don't think the Rams, if they're being honest, I don't think they would say we're playing our best ball right now, which is not exactly where you want to be at this time of the year. But if you just think about, the last game against Atlanta, and you look at last and you look at even the Carolina game, it's not like we walk away saying, man, this is the team that looks like they're the team to beat or to be in a Super Bowl. And on the opposite side, Seattle looks like the difference. They look like that, the team that's playing great, playing the way that they want to play. But I think the thing in this matchup is this is the third time these teams are playing. You can throw all of that out of the window because they know each other well. They know each other from a scheme standpoint, from a personnel standpoint. So I think the most important thing in this matchup will be going back and watching the two prior games and which team can make the right adjustments to be better in this game throughout all four quarters, not just for a quarter or a half, I think will be the difference in the game.
When I look at Sam Darnold and the Seahawks, when they get the lead, they're almost obviously more dangerous. And it kind of protects Sam Darnold from having to be a superhero. And if you're the Rams, you want it the opposite. You love to be up 10-0 and force Sam Darnold to pass. When you see Darnold as a defensive back, do you see a great quarterback or just a smart, good quarterback, and without slighting him?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say great because I've learned when I got to NBC, we have one of our producers, Fred Gadelli, who's a Hall of Fame producer. If you say great, he will come to you and be like, great. Tom Brady's great. Is this guy great? Joe Montana was great. Is this guy like he compares it? So like when I hear Sam Darnold great, no, because I wouldn't put him up there with Mahomes and Lamar and Josh. So, but do I think he's very capable to be the guy playing in a Super Bowl and to win a Super Bowl this year? No doubt about it. And I think what you said is true. Each team and how they win is different. And I think Sam Darnold realizes how this team wins is how he needs to play. They're going to win by playing from ahead. How do you play from ahead? Let's see what the defense gives us. Jason Garrett always says to me when he was a coach, he used to say, we got to take what the defense gives us, but we got to take it aggressively. Meaning, hey, they're going to give us the check down, but they also might be giving us the end cut. Let's take the end cut. Let's be aggressive. And I think for Sam Darnold, how can we get Kenneth Walker going? And then if the Rams decide, hey, we got to get another safety in the box, now it's time to bring Shaheed in the game and bring JSN and Cooper Kupp. Let's go to those guys. Let's use our tight ends as much as possible. I think Darnold realizes that he's not out there trying to be hero. He's out there trying to be the game-winning quarterback.
AFC playoffs, Pats at Broncos, no Bo Nix for Denver. If you were starting for New England on Sunday, if you were in your prime as a defensive back, how would you and your team go after backup quarterback Jarrett Stidham, who has never taken a snap in the postseason?
I would tell our guys we got to be as complicated as possible from a scheme standpoint. I would tell our guys we want to play in a Super Bowl. Tell everybody else in your life this week, you got to take a break. Nothing else matters but me understanding and learning all of the five or six or seven defenses we're putting in just for this week. I need to master it because if we can give Stidham looks that he hasn't seen on film because he hasn't had the ability to adjust within a game or get the feel of things. And again, he hasn't played a game since the preseason, and the preseason's vanilla. He hasn't started an actual game in, I think, 2 or 3 years. Let's give him so many different looks that it's hard for him to do, and he has to keep checking the ball down. Let's try to frustrate him with these looks and then get pressure. And that comes from working your butt off and out preparing your opponent during the week. So if I was in the secondary and I was a safety like I was, I would challenge the linebackers. I would challenge the corners and the other safeties. How can we really know what we're doing and then know them and how we can attack? And I think, that's how I grew up in New England. How can we game plan for just this game and make it as hard as possible for this offense to have success? And I think that would be the key for New England playing well on defense.
All right, we're going to get you out of here, Devin. Devin McCourty, Football Night in America, three-time Super Bowl champion with the Patriots. A couple rapid-fire questions. Do you have a Super Bowl ring within your reach right now?
I don't. I don't. I don't keep them in the office.
Your Super Bowl rings are kind of medium-sized. These days, they're really, really huge, but yours aren't the old style from like the 70s, 80s. Do you think they should make like a wearable Super Bowl ring, almost like a high school ring that you could wear socially that's worth like 10 grand and you could still keep in a safety deposit box, the big boys?
It would be nice. I don't wear my rings. They're like my last one is like all of these, and the other two are not much smaller. We wore our rings to do different photo shoots at NBC. Coach Dungy will bring his in. Rodney will bring his three in. Jason Garrett will bring, and like my three just looks so ridiculous next to him that like I never wear my rings, because even if someone doesn't know who I am, you put that on your finger, now we're having a whole conversation that I might not even want to be a part of. So it would be nice to have a little clash ring like that.
Yeah. By the way, I went to high school with Rodney Harrison. I have a picture of him as a freshman playing ball. He's got the high top kid and play fade. I'm going to text that to you so you can give it to him.
Yeah, definitely.
Rapid fire. You were at Soldier Field last week for the Rams game. Was that the coldest game you've ever been part of as an announcer or player or other?
Coldest as an announcer, not as a player. I played at Soldier Field my rookie year.
Yeah.
In 2010. That was a little bit colder than that.
Does it affect one position more than others, like defensive backs, quarterbacks, or is it just you see who's tough?
It definitely affects skill more than linemen. Linemen don't care about being cold and they're fat. So they're more protected against the cold than us.
Devin McCourty, NBC's Football Night in America. Thanks a lot for joining us on the tailgate.
Definitely appreciate you having me.
That was great having Devin on this show. Man, really fun breaking down the game, talking about what the Bears' decisions and all that. But coming up on the tailgate, we're going to talk about the Indiana Hoosiers winning the college football national championship. It's still sinking in. I can't believe I just uttered that on radio. And bonus coverage. We're joined by Chicago Bears tight end Durham Smythe. That's next. This is the tailgate, 670 The Score.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story.
These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of The Tailgate with Paul Pabst.
You're supposed to be a professional.
We'll work harder than anybody to win. But man, when we're dead tired in the fourth quarter, winning's got to mean more than just money.
You're hired to do a job.
Job! Job! I don't want no job. I want to play football. I want some feeling. I want some team spirit.
This ain't no high school. You don't have to love each other to play.
It's just what I mean, you bastard. Every time I call it a game, you call it a business. And every time I call it a business, you call it a game.
Saturdays on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app.
Back on 670 The Score, I am your host, Paul Pabst, your Saturday morning football injection. Coming up, much more in the Bears season, this season, next season, the offseason. Can't wait to talk about the offseason. A lot to get to. The last offseason was galactically great. I still go back to all the offensive line signings last year in the March and what built this season. We're talking about the AFC and NFC title games. In about 3 minutes from now, Chicago Bears tight end Durham Smythe is going to join the show. That's a bonus. It's getting up to positive degrees in Chicago. I think studs, I think, what are we at? 3 degrees above right now? What are we looking at?
Oh, no, we're not above zero yet. We are not sitting above. Downtown Chicago, we are currently sitting at, as my app reloads here, minus six with a wind chill of minus 23.
That's fine. Just wear a coat, walk backwards, don't trip over the concrete. All right, let's get to it. College football season is over. The Indiana Hoosiers have won the national title. I am still coming to grips with this. Again, if you grew up in the Midwest and you're of a certain age, you remember Indiana football being below average for decades. Every once in a while, they've had Antoine Randle L, and they'd be 6-5 and make the Pool and Weed Eater Bowl. Then a couple of years ago, they hired Kurt Cignetti out of James Madison. And then last year, they get Fernando Mendoza, the quarterback out of Cal, and had a very good season last year. And a lot of people thought that was it. What a nice season for Indiana making the postseason. The last four games for Indiana football, they beat Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon, and Miami. And a couple of those were blowouts. Think of that lineup. They had no trouble beating those four teams. I know a couple were close. But it's really like no turnaround story in American sports history, not just college football. I mean, it's like Leicester City in the Premier League or something. Indiana football is not supposed to win the national title. It's just, it's so freaky. It's so fun. And again, I know it's not Illinois or Notre Dame, and if you're a fan listening to the show, but if you're a Big Ten fan, if you're a fan of great sports stories, the Indiana story was fantastic this year. I hope they keep rolling, but it doesn't matter. I call it Hoosiers too, because you couldn't make this up. If someone told me 5 years ago the Indiana Hoosiers are winning the national title, I would have bet a finger against it, and I would have lost. All right, this is the Tailgate 6-7 Score. I'm Paul Pabst. Let's get back to the Bears. Joining us now on the Tailgate, former Notre Damer,
Chicago Bears tight end, number 81, Durham Smythe. Thanks for joining the show. Really nice of you to take some time. We are almost a week past the playoff loss to the Rams, and I was wondering, as a player, does it take a little bit of time to come to grips that such a fantastic season is over?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, the NFL season and structure is, I always say, it's a crazy one because you're really building, you know, from the middle of April, really pretty consistently until the day the season ends. And then when the season ends, it's so abrupt. You know, the next day you're out of the building and then it's, you know, the season's over. So it definitely takes a little bit of time to come to grips with it. You know, it's always better after you have a, you know, a somewhat successful year.
Right.
Obviously, you know, in this organization, you know, being short of a Super Bowl is not considered a success. So there's always room for growth there, but you're right. It's so abrupt when it ends that it definitely takes some time to come to grips.
I want to get to the Rams game, but it's an interesting thing because as a Bears fan or a media member or a player, I think there's different looks. But when that game's over, you're obviously upset. We're upset. But then you start taking a pause and saying, look where this team was a year ago. And I know you're new to the squad, but if I told you in September when the Bears were 0-2, you'd be in an overtime game with the Rams in January to go to the NFC title game, you would have said what?
I mean, I would have said, sign me up, you know, when you're that deep in the playoffs and you have a chance, you know, in overtime, nonetheless, to go to the NFC championship game. Obviously, you're going to take that. Obviously, you want it to turn out differently because kind of as Ben has mentioned in the last, you know, week, but even before that, it really is a year-to-year deal in this business. Like, mm-hmm. I completely understand where people think, you know, you build off of something. Maybe this year was more successful than the years past in this organization, but it really is year-to-year. Like, if you get to that point in the divisional round where you can win and go to the NFC championship, you have to take advantage. So, you know, there's you can look back and say, you know, there were some successes, but at the same time, when you get that deep, you got to win the game. So that's tough as well.
Durham Smythe, number 81, Bears tight end, joining us now on the tailgate. I'm Paul Pabst. Going back to the Rams game, you guys had the ball. I think it was first and goal at the 6-yard line late in the fourth quarter. It looked like punch it in, get this game to overtime or wherever it's going to go. And then they get the ball back. And what is it like on the sidelines when the offense is like sitting there going, we need one more shot. We need one more shot.
Yeah. I mean, I think through this season, we had so much experience in late games where we were either down or, you know, tied, whatever it may be. There was a lot of successes there. So it's something that's built over time. But I think in that spot, everyone, you know, on the sideline, on the offense was like, we're going to get the ball back and mm-hmm. we're going to win the game. Because you do establish some belief throughout a team when you can do it, you know, multiple times through the year. And even late in that game, I was telling guys, like, I mean, like, we're going to win the game. Like, no one had any doubt. But that's, you know, built up over the course of the season.
All right, you play tight end. Colson Loveland gets banged up. Komet comes in. It's 4th and 4. From your eyes as a receiver, walk me through the play that Caleb Williams made and Komet made. He's almost not getting enough credit. Walk me through that play as a football player.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's when you watch the play on tape, it's like, how did he do this? How does this happen? But
it looks like AI.
It does, but he's done, maybe not to like something that wild, but he's done that, speaking of the quarterback, Caleb, so many times throughout the year that it was almost like, as he's running around 40 yards behind the line of scrimmage, it's like he's going to still somehow make a play is kind of the thought process, which speaks to him. I mean, that's a crazy thing to have to, you know, be able to think about. But obviously, he's a magician with that type of thing. And speaking of Cole about, I mean, it's such a cool deal. Like, obviously, Cole has his, you know, very important role on the team. But, you know, when it's 4th and 4, end of a playoff game, for him to step up and make a play like that, I mean, it's almost like a storybook type deal. Obviously, it would have been more of one if, you know, we won the game. But sure, nonetheless, awesome play by him. I was, you know, I couldn't be more excited. And it was really cool.
When I watched that play, I watched it back, and I see Komet in the back of the end zone, and you could speak to this as a tight end. It almost felt like the DBs didn't think that Caleb could get the ball that far back, and they stepped up a little bit. And Cole held his spot, just a little push off, a light push off, but not enough to draw a flag. And the ball's sitting there. It's almost like the DBs didn't buy into that throw.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely what it looked like. And obviously Cole being a, you know, a big body, I think was, you know, made a great play by kind of, like you said, kind of just establishing his ground, almost like boxing the guy out a little bit. And when you have that much of a size advantage and you can utilize it, I mean, and the quarterback puts the ball up where, you know, he's trusting someone to make a play, that's what happens.
Cole Kmet, great play by him. Durin Smythe joining us now on the tailgate, number 81, tight end for the Bears. The past few weeks, especially I go back to the Green Bay game, and I want to talk to you about that Green Bay game on December 20th because you had a play that doesn't get enough credit. But when that crowd starts stepping up late December, early January, combo with the weather, how does that affect the other team in the huddle when they can't hear themselves? Or you see Matthew Stafford pounding the sides of his head because he can't hear plays. You've been on the other side of that, I'm sure. How much does that hurt the offense when you're in that violent atmosphere, that loud atmosphere?
Yeah, I mean, number one, I think the atmosphere at Soldier Field as the year went on was one of the more special, consistent atmospheres I've, you know, been a part of in 8 years in the NFL, and that speaks to the city, and it's a really cool deal. On the other side of that, it does make a huge difference. I tell people all the time, like, being on the road, especially as like a tight end, someone who's a little bit removed from the quarterback, right, when you're at the line of scrimmage, it's night and day difference from, you know, being able to get off the ball, being able to hear what he's saying, which really changes kind of everything you have to do. So it makes a drastic difference. I tell people all the time that in the COVID year, 2020, when there were no fans, that was almost one of my favorite years to play football because on the road, I could hear everything. It was like, it didn't matter if we were on the road at home. It was great for me. But speaking to that, like the crowd, when they're that crazy, makes a huge difference.
I want to go back. Durin Smythe, number 81, Bears tight end, joining us now on the tailgate. December 20th, Green Bay, the overtime game, Caleb to DJ for the game winner. I don't think you got enough credit on that play. I love great blocking. I love great pass protection. You were in the up back position. I'm not sure who it was for Green Bay was blitzing, but you kind of caught them out of the corner of your eye and you kind of lunged to your right. Wasn't a hold. Yeah. I'm backing you up. Was not a hold. Ha. Walk me through that play with your eyes when you see the blitzing linebacker, because if you don't pick up that block, that play never happens.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, playing in the backfield was something that, you know, coming into the season, I didn't do as much, but I did a lot this year. And yeah, in that protection, it's a 7-man protection, but in our offense, we try to get, you know, people out. So we're not wasting blockers. So I'm basically just scanning, you know, front side to back side. And then if nobody comes, I'll get out on a check down.
Right.
And I think Quay Walker was the one blitzing. And honestly, like, if you look back on the play, he made a great play too. I thought when I was coming back, I was going to catch him off guard. And I thought he was going to try to run through me because that's kind of what he's done in the past. And,
right,
you know, he had kind of a great pass rush move. And lucky enough, yeah, I just got enough of him for Caleb to get it off. But you know, it's a cool protection. It kind of makes it safe for everyone scanning back and forth, and it was enough time.
Yeah, I just want to give you credit for that block, because sometimes that, you know, we talk about the throw, we talk about catches, but if people don't get the quarterback a chance, when you play with a guy like Caleb Williams who can extend plays and you're in the pass or routes, what's the practice? Do you practice that to where you break your routes and go a certain direction? How does that work in practice bleeding into a game?
Yeah, we do. We do work on that. And that's, you kind of hit it on the head. That's a very specific basis to basis type of deal. Like if a quarterback, you know, can't make plays like that, then it's not something you work on. But, you know, as the year went on, that's something that we talked about quite a bit. And it's just, you know, it's you never really know when a quarterback's scrambling. It's kind of not chaos, but it's so individualized on every
right
play. But we have general rules that we try to follow. When he breaks one way, we break that way. You know, where you are in the pattern and the progression kind of changes your angles a little bit. Obviously, at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, everyone go make a play, like do whatever you have to do to get open. But there are general rules that we try to follow. And I think, you know, as the continuity of the offense continues to grow, that's something that I think everyone will be, you know, even more comfortable with.
You've been in the league now a bunch of years, you know, going on, you're entering a 8 or 9, I'm not even sure, but like when you see the rookies come in, Colston Loveland, Kyle Manungai, Luther Burden, when do you know, and it could be any of them, where you say to yourself in practice or a preseason game or maybe game 1, 2, or 3, oh, that's a ball player we got. When do you kind of make that judgment as a veteran?
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes games to really, you know, be able to see that. Obviously, like when guys come in, you can tell that they're talented. But especially with the rules now in terms of training camp and contact and things
right
like that, you really don't know until you're in an actual game being tackled. But usually you can learn pretty quickly. Like with a lot of those guys you mentioned with, you know, Colston and Kyle, and, you know, when they're in a game breaking tackles in the preseason and, you know, making plays, whatever it may be, you can tell pretty quickly that, all right, these guys can play. And it's just from that point on, it's like, all right, how good can they get?
All right, Ben Johnson, we see him at the podium. We see him on the sidelines, and he's pretty focused, that grim look on his face. I like that he doesn't wear the hat because he's not scared to let the ears get cold. I respect that, tough guy. When Ben Johnson is mad at you, is it a word or a look?
That's a good question. I think that that's a case-by-case basis, but I think more than anything, it is a look. Like, you can tell immediately, you know, when he's not pleased with the execution or with how something went on. And normally, if you are, you know, smart enough player to pick up on social cues like that, you know just by the look.
Yeah, it does look like the side eye is the big one that I noticed from guys. He doesn't have to say anything. All right, Bears tight end Durham Smythe joining us now on the tailgate. We're going to get you out of here because I know the offseason is coming along. But this season had so many games. I mean, you can't even track them. The Bengals game or whatever game. There's 8 or 9 games where the last seconds, the drives that you were part of or on the sidelines for. If you were asked a couple weeks from now, the moment on the field or off the field that will always stay with you from this season, what would it be? And it could be a couple.
Oh man, that's a great question. And you kind of hit it on the head with it being such a unique year, with there being so many of those, it's kind of almost hard to pinpoint. I think the, you know, Colston's play at the end of the Bengals game was something that, you know, I'll never forget. But man, there's so many. I mean, DJ's catch, like we kind of just talked about.
I think the Colston play is interesting because that seemed like the first one in a series. When he caught it and then the defensive backs tried to hit him, they whiff. And he just kind of looked like, I keep going now. And he just rumbled downfield. You guys must have been almost laughing when you saw the play.
Yeah, I mean, I was losing it. It's hilarious. Jim Dre, who's our tight ends coach, is the most even keel, you know, coach I've ever had. Probably also the best, you know, one of the best at his job in the league. But it was such a huge play. And I remember grabbing Jim by the shoulders, just like expecting him to kind of be juiced up too. And he just turned to me with like the most normal smile and winked. And I was like, wow, I mean, he's really keeping it tight no matter what. But yeah, I think that one's probably the you know, the most wild, but there, you know, there were so many.
Seahawks versus Rams this week. Is it tough to watch? And if you had to like put your analyst hat on for a second, Rams, Seahawks, who do you like?
Yeah, it will be tough to watch. You know, I don't think, you know, when a game ends like it did last week, and you know you were that close to getting to the next one, it'll be tough. But you know, that's how it works. And you move on. You, like I said, you watch it. But it's going to be a great game. Obviously, they've played twice this year, and they had great games. And, you know, the last one, I'm actually watching highlights, or I was watching highlights about 10 minutes ago, you know, with Saubert making that catch at the end, who's one of my good pals. I think it'll be a great game. That's going to be a great atmosphere in Seattle. You know, that's talking about home field advantage. They have it. And I think it'll be another good one.
All right, Durham, before we let you go, you're from Texas. This show is called The Tailgate. We talk food and football, sometimes in that order. Now, sure. When I go to Texas, I always look for the most rundown building that says barbecue on the side, and I go right in there, and I don't ask anyone's opinion, and I ask the guy, tell me what I should have. I defer to the owner. Is that a good strategy? And if you had to recommend one barbecue place, your town or other town, what would it be?
That is generally a good strategy, but here's what I'll say about that.
Go ahead. That
my two favorite places that I'll tell you in just a second, both started, just like you mentioned, smaller places. You wouldn't, you know anything from the outside looking in, but both of them have kind of found some success in the last couple of years, and they've upgraded. So now they look kind of nice, but the quality is the same. So I wouldn't completely sleep on places that are looking good, but my two favorites, in my hometown, right on I-35, Belton, Texas, is Miller's Barbecue.
Okay.
That's mentioned in Texas Monthly and, you know, all the other ones. Yeah. In the past. That's a great spot. And then I lived in Austin for a while. So my favorite in Austin, although I love all of them, I'm not, you know, trying to,
you don't want to get in trouble
too much, but, La Barbecue, L A Barbecue, On the east side is my favorite. I think they actually just recently got a Michelin star, which is crazy to think about. But back in the day, they were just kind of the small place in East Austin. So those two are my favorites.
Well, this is great advice for you kids out there next time you're down in Texas. Number 81, Durham Smythe, Bears tight end. Really fun season. You did a great job. Love the block in the Packers game, and it's great to have you on the score.
Appreciate that, man. Pleasure.
Very nice of Durham to talk to us on the Tailgate 6-7 score. I'm Paul Papps before he heads out of town. And I had to mention that because that DJ Moore catch from Caleb Williams a month ago at Soldier Field, if you watch that play, there's a blitzing linebacker and Durham picks him up, or that play never happens. Oh, we're excited about our FM debut, 104.3 The Score, coming February 2nd during the Mully and Haw Show, of course. That's right, all score shows, Cubs, Bulls on FM, high fidelity all the time. You sound thick and rich on FM, including downtown Chicago. The Score will be heard on 670 AM, but starting Monday, February 2nd, is the debut of 104.3 on FM. The simulcast is presented by the official sportsbook of The Score, Circa Sports, sports betting the way it should be with no bet fees. Before we break, we are going to talk more Bears and AFC-NFC title game. Terry Borish passed away, and I only met Terry once, and the one time I met him, he was super, super nice to me, which is what everybody told me. I work also on the Dan Patrick Show. I've been doing sports radio forever, basically. And I'll say this because the people at The Score are going to talk much more glowingly and eloquently about him because they work with him daily. He mastered the craft of sports radio talk, period. I used to listen to him. I used to hear him. I used to hear the different people he'd work with. He was very, very, very good at this job. He mastered the craft of sports radio, and it was an honor to listen to him. All right, coming up next, the morale meter, AFC-NFC playoff predictions, and all that is next. This is The Tailgate. I'm Paul Papst, 670 The Score.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more of The Tailgate with Paul Papst.
I love football. Love it. Love it.
Saturdays on 670 The Score and the Odyssey app.
Back on 670 The Score, I am Paul Papst, getting you ready. Early odds coming up inside the clubhouse. Interesting week for both Cubs and Sox. Going to keep an eye on that. Can't wait for baseball season, even though football season is still going on. Coming up tomorrow, Patriots, Broncos, Rams, Seahawks. We'll get your predictions in a bit. It is interesting when you look at Rams, Broncos, Seahawks, Patriots. Each quarterback has a lot to play for. That's very obvious, Paul. Jarrett Stidham, the backup for the Broncos. He's never started a playoff game. He started, I think, 5 NFL games. He's maybe like 1-3, 1-4. He's kind of a nondescript player. If he somehow takes down the Patriots and gets the Broncos without Bo Nix to the title game, all of a sudden he's stamped in NFL history. If you go back to Nick Foles years ago, when he stepped in for Carson Wentz with the Eagles. And then Drake May of the Patriots, having a great season. I'm pretty sure he's going to finish 2nd in the MVP, which is nuts. The Patriots feel ahead of schedule, 14-3. They won 4 games last year. You know, the Bears had the turnaround. The Patriots had the turnaround as well. Rams, Seahawks. If Sam Darnold, who was considered a bust out of USC after, flaming out with the Jets, he had a great year last year with the Vikings. And then this year, he had another great year. The Seahawks are 14-3. All the blame for his bustness, if that's a word, goes on the Jets, as usual. And then the Rams, Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford's going to win the league MVP this year. He's going to have a chance to win his 2nd Super Bowl, maybe a Super Bowl MVP. That's going to turn him to a first ballot Hall of Famer. All right, a couple things to get to. I was thinking about this past 6 months as a Bears fan, and talked about this in the first segment. It feels like there should be a documentary on this season. If you're a production company in Chicago, do it. But it's weird, like a team that doesn't win at all gets a documentary. It's like Moneyball is the story of the Oakland A's. They didn't win the title, but it was a great story. And I just won't ever forget so many things from this season. There's so many, you have to go back through them in your mind. You wish you just watch the highlight tape. The throws, the fans at Soldier Field. I mean, the fans at Soldier Field this year stepped up. I mean, I'm not pandering. Those games felt like college football games. Going to the pubs with your friends, checking with my mom, who's 82 in Orland Park, and hanging on there. She got to see another Bears season. And it's really fun to see as a Bears fan. And then next year, as Ben Johnson said, nothing carries over. It's a new season and you start at zero. And a lot of people are going to pick against the Bears next year. They're going to say, well, that all those turnovers weren't sustainable. And now you're going to have a tougher schedule, which they will. But you have to look at the positives, the big positives. The offensive line is in great shape. Yeah, Trapillo got the injury, but Wright, Tooney, all those guys, When was the last time you felt completely great about a Bears offensive line? The running backs, Kyle Manungai under contract. Swift. The rookies, PFF ranked the Bears draft class as the number one draft class this year in production in the NFL. Manungai's great. I mean, Colston Loveland is borderline star. You know, he's probably won't catch 110 balls because they like to balance it in Chicago, but my gosh, what a season he had. And I think Luther Burden is just scratching the surface. I think he's really tough to deal with. The other guy I love, besides Nashawn Wright, great season by him, Austin Booker, the defensive end. I think his second half was underrated, and I think he can be, I'm trying to pump the brakes here, special as a defensive end. And the bigger thing for a Bears fan this year is the belief that you're never out of a football game. Patrick Mahomes has had that for the past 7 and 8 years, and Chiefs fans have had that. But how many quarterbacks in the league would you be comfortable with saying, oh, I want my guy to be down 5 with the ball with 2 minutes left and 2 timeouts. I'd rather be down with the ball than have the other team have the ball. When Caleb Williams got the ball the past few weeks against the Rams, I was like, well, this is going to be a touchdown. Didn't work out, but I believed it would be. And that's the kind of belief you want to have in your quarterback. 2 years ago, imagine thinking about the Bears quarterback this way. So we could talk about the negatives. And next week on the tailgate, 6-7 the score on Paul Pabst, we are going to recap the Bears season in detail. We're going to give out awards, the good, the bad, and it's mostly good. How's morale? Weirdly great. We do the morale meter on this show every year and every week. And again, how many teams in the NFL know the direction of their franchise with the coach and the quarterback? And a lot of other players. But like the Bills, are they in better shape? I'm not even sure you could say the Bills are in better shape than the Chicago Bears. There's some other teams like that. Mahomes is injured. Lamar Jackson, his career is iffy. How many teams can say that? All right, let's get to AFC-NFC title game. Patriots-Broncos. I would love to pick the Broncos. I would love to pick the Jarrett Stidham story. I don't think I can. The Patriots have a great defensive line, and they rush up the middle. I think they're going to make a mess of the Broncos' offensive line and really get to Jarrett Stidham and squeak out a close victory. I think it's going to be a three-pointer, and the Patriots will advance to the Super Bowl. Rams-Seahawks. I've been going back and forth with this all day. I don't know if I believe that the Seahawks are winning, but I'm picking the Seahawks to win. It's a great story. The Rams had an off week last week, but a lot of fun. All right. I would like to thank all the guests on the show today. Devin McCourty, thanks to NBC Sports. And Durham Smythe, thanks very much to the Bears for providing him. That's the tailgate for this week. As exciting of a regular season we've had in Chicago since 06. A lot of fun, a lot of football coming up. Enjoy the cold, pack it in. Get some bad food and pack it in and watch football all day tomorrow. Talk to you next Saturday. The tailgate, every week on The Score. I'm Paul Pabst. Take it easy.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.